Hey guys, thank you for tuning in to Hit the Mark with Mark Levy. Yes, my voice is a little quieter right now because it's at 1:25 a.m. where we're recording, and I think that's the appropriate time to record this episode. As some of you know, one of my best friends, yes, this is number two of the four best friend episodes. The other two will be coming up, one hopefully fairly soon, and the other one as soon as I can get to Denver or as soon as Denver can come to me. Amy, let me know when. But this is one that I'm very excited about. He is a friend of a lot of my friends, good person. There's going to be no review tonight, just letting you guys know that. It's just going to be straight up conversation with one with one of my favorite people, who is...
The belt is off.
The belt has come off. This is getting very awkward, very quick, not even a minute into the episode. But you definitely know of him if you're in the improv scene. Because you're always like, hey, Mark, where is this person? And I'm like, oh, they're in Chicago. Oh, yeah. Tell them I say hi. Well, Mishu Hilmi is on my couch right now.
Yep.
And I want to say thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, and thanks for letting me sleep on this couch later.
Yeah. I mean, we're both up right now, and, you know, mm-hmm. we just had a very nice dinner and very nice conversation.
Went to Tasty's.
Yeah, in Astoria.
It was tasty.
It was very tasty. Yeah. So, wow, this is so weird, like, jumping in without having, like, any, like, other, like, weird plugs or, like talking about things beforehand.
Yeah.
Of course, I do have to say thank you to Doug Whitey, because I know he is going to listen to this episode.
Doug is boss. He is boss.
Doug is amazing. He created that amazing theme song. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's amazing, and there will be a video soon of me dancing to that. there will be a video of me dancing to that 8-second song. I will record it myself if I have to, and it'll be very pathetically fun, like me. But but for those that don't know, Mishu is a very exciting guy. I'm building him up a lot more than I probably should.
Yeah, let's just pass him the build-up and just talk like human beings.
All right, so, dude, I don't really ask a lot of questions on the show.
All right.
I like to always ask people, like, what was your big comedy inspiration as a kid?
I got to remember. Well, I was born in Egypt, so I think...
What city?
Cairo.
I mean, I know, but, yeah.
So, probably earliest... Well, I think grew up watching, like, Chaplin, black and white stuff.
Really?
And then...
I never knew that you were raised on Chaplin in that way.
Yeah. And then my dad had produced movies in Egypt, and Adel Imam is still alive, like a really shticky guy, so...
Yeah.
Probably started with shtick.
That's fine. Shtick is good.
Mm-hmm. Just, yeah, Egyptian stuff.
What was Egyptian shtick like?
Usually hyper-violent, very violent stuff.
So, like, Three Stooges times 10?
Probably, yeah. I mean, we used to watch puppet shows at, like, kids' parties, and it would just be grown men screaming into microphones with puppets who would beat each other with sticks.
That sounds terrifying.
Kind of like medieval stuff, I guess.
That sounds terrifying, dude.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad.
I really didn't know that, because I know that you are a Chaplin fan, but I didn't know, what was your, like, gateway Chaplin movie?
I just remember just growing up with a lot of silent movies, black and white silent stuff.
Yeah.
Just reading, or having my dad read aloud the placards.
Yeah.
During the silent films.
Cool.
Yep.
Nice. Well, I mean, what is your favorite Chaplin movie now?
You know, I can't even remember the short one I saw.
Oh, shorts are your favorite ones.
Yeah, I like I like shorts, but I just haven't, that's where it started, but I haven't really gone back to Chaplin.
That's fine.
Yeah.
It's totally fine. I really am a diehard Chaplin fan. Like, I fell in love with The Great Dictator. Mm-hmm. When I was at the appropriate age, I realized it's a really fucked up movie. because, you know, I mean, being raised Jewish, you know how fucked up the Great Dictator really is. There's scenes in that movie that will never not make me smile. Like the scene where he's dancing with the globe, or just like the scene where he's like screaming into microphones. The microphones are cowering. And
yeah.
Oh, God. I mean, the fact that the guy made a satire about Hitler while Hitler was fully in power.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just beautiful, really. and like modern times.
Well, you know, yeah, exactly. In terms of satire, you know, what are we doing now? What are we doing? What are we doing? Are we just creating entertainment? You know, what is the meaning behind what we're doing?
But I mean, entertainment's not bad though.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying, you know, are we settling? Are we just settling for anesthesia? You know, distractions.
Yeah. Which is. Yeah, no, I understand that.
It's finding the balance. I guess purpose, you know, what is the meaning and purpose behind what we are consuming?
The funny thing is you using the word purpose right now is making me think of a show that I've been seeing a lot at work.
Ooh, Two Broke Girls?
Yeah, you know me. I'm always watching Two Broke Girls at work.
Anyway.
No, Avenue Q.
Oh, yeah.
Because I now work at New World Stages, at least for the holidays. And I know you know this, but Avenue Q is one of my favorite musicals of all time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the fact that it's like actually really deep and meaningful while being disturbingly funny is great. And you are Princeton, apparently, in my mind, since...
Is it the main character?
Yeah, it's the one that just got out of college.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's not the case with you because you've been out of college for a few years now.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, like... like, you just used the phrase purpose. You just used the word purpose.
Yeah.
Which makes me think that you are kind of like the comedy version of Princeton.
If only I remembered that play more.
I've seen it three times this week.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, so, you have seen it, so it's fresh in your
Seriously seen it like three times the last 2 days.
Mm.
Like I worked both shifts in there yesterday and I worked it tonight.
All right.
Which is great because I really like that show still a lot. That's not for my 10th time today. You haven't seen it in a long time.
No, it's been a while. It's been a couple years.
It was on Broadway when we saw it or at New World?
Pretty sure it was at New World. Yeah, it wasn't on Broadway. Yeah. No.
Hmm. Well, you know, I mean, hey, at least you've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, okay, when did you move to America?
Oh, God. I think 90. Early '90s. Had to be in the early '90s.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice. And you moved to upstate New York.
Yeah, upstate New York. Yeah.
What was that like, being raised in upstate New York?
I guess typical suburban, growth. I had an accent in elementary school.
Like the Egyptian accent?
I don't even know. I guess, maybe Czech. The accent was muddled because I spoke English with my mother, you know,
and
Arabic, but...
So it was like some like...
I sounded like... the garbage. I throw trash in the garbage. I like my Piscetti. I give you a Fowler on Valentine's Day. That's how it sounded. But add the octaves because I was eight or nine.
Nowhere near through puberty.
No. I had a mustache.
You did? Until
seventh grade, I had a poop stash.
I developed very early in that way too.
Mm-hmm.
Like I remember being like fourth grade, like I was really excited because I started school people like, oh, Mark, you have a mustache.
Yes.
And I was like, oh sweet, I have a mustache like my dad. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yep. So you and right now you have a full beard.
Full beard.
Last time I saw you, I think you were shaved.
No, last time you saw me I had a beard too.
Yeah, because you were
2 months
wanted
of travel.
Yeah. Yeah, because you went through your awesome sabbatical through
my
the city.
Sabbatical. I was finding myself, my spirit animal.
There's so many weird things that we could call that trip.
My spirit journey.
Yeah, your spirit quest.
Yep.
Your spirit quest of Mishu. Find the inner Mishu through America. Ride the rails.
Riding the rails.
Yeah.
Doing rails on the rails.
Yeah. Oh, that's always fun. Well, what? Just having my voice there.
It's like 1:30 in the morning. That's what happened to your voice.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. I didn't notice that. It's actually 1:34 in the morning.
Nice.
Oh, this is already one of my favorite episodes just because I've never taped this late before.
Ooh, nice.
And I like that's a little awkward because of that.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So you went to school at Binghamton.
Binghamton.
Yeah, I just said Binghamton.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's on purpose because I'm bringing.
What do we accomplish by learning about the past of someone? What is achieved? I mean, what do we find out? I'm just curious. I guess to know someone's backstory.
Yeah, I mean to like find a common ground.
Common ground. Okay.
And like you're like. A lot, because you have a lot in common actually with a person I hope to have on the show soon.
Ooh, nice.
Mr. Brandon Gardner.
Oh, yeah.
Who's actually been mentioned in the last three episodes.
Yep. Binghamton University. Yeah. Went to SUNY Binghamton.
Yeah.
Art Spiegelman.
alumni in the 60s did Mouse, like Artie.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Paul Reiser, notable alumni.
Who's Paul Reiser now?
Yeah.
This
Andy Kindler.
Really?
BU alumni. Well, Binghamton University. I say BU, but that's Boston University. Yeah. We call it BU.
So, like, have you run some, like, Boston University just, like, and they're like, we're the real BU. And they're like, no, mm-hmm. We're the real BU.
I don't even get into that argument, but I've learned early on not to refer to my alma mater as BU.
So, yeah, I mean, because there's, like, a big comedy podcast, listen to comedy podcast, mm-hmm. and I know that you started, like, doing all that stuff, like...
Yeah, short form.
In college?
Yeah, in college. It was, I think my junior year. Yeah, junior year.
Okay.
I had done short form in high school.
All right. I tried to do some of that in high school. I was really not good.
I just remember...
Do you want, like, my... Yeah, sorry, continue.
No, I just remember the first time in my life ever being in my head, the quote-unquote, was that. And I still remember it. I think it was a scene about Jonah and the whale, and I didn't know what Jonah and the whale was because I never touched a Bible. So I was wasn't hip to the New Testament stories. Even though is that the New Testament? I don't even know.
I believe it's New Testament. Okay. I don't remember it being in my Testament when I was Jewish day school. It's definitely New Testament.
See, I'm not...
What?
I'm just thinking about short form. You know, good old days.
It's weird, like, okay... So, I actually did follow with improv during high school, mm-hmm. but I was told I was really bad at it.
That's a great, great way to, you know, treat a young ego.
Yeah. In Miami, there was a big, like, improv festival. Mm-hmm. And one year, like, my senior year of high school, my parents, like, shelled out, like, a lot of money for me to, like, go to, like, workshops with Second City mm-hmm. and Groundlings.
Oh, wow.
And, like, the only people that were in the workshop were, like, people that were running the work, like, the festival.
Yeah.
I don't want to say the name of that improv troupe because there's no need to.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting glares of of disgust the whole time.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously, this was me, like, still, like, just being like, I want to make people laugh. Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, being a serious actor, it's nice to make people laugh.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think it's kind of a curse. I think it really puts yourself in a corner if that's the consistent product you seek. I think the desire to make people laugh prevents you from allowing yourself to explore the full dynamics of theater.
Yes.
Especially in terms of improv, which I guess it's the focus of what the theater is trying to do, but I think it could be a crutch that prevents you from growing. Constantly needing the laughter.
I'm not gonna lie, I really did need the laughter back then.
Oh, sure, back then. Yeah.
I mean,
back then I needed a lot too.
what did you need back then?
Oh God, oral sex. I don't know.
No. Like I mean, like being an only child, I always constantly wanted like attention.
Yeah.
And like you know, and like yeah, like I feel like. I feel like I really wanted to be a stand-up comedian back then.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really funny because, like, now I'm terrified of that idea.
Yes.
Like, it takes me a lot to do, like, storytelling and stuff mm-hmm. like that, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, I mean, I'm really a big fan of the idea of ensemble.
Uh-huh.
And if the ensemble is an ensemble of one, it's not an ensemble.
No, that is no longer the definition of ensemble.
Yeah. It's a solo show, which is not necessarily mm-hmm. bad. Uh-huh. But, I mean, like, it's, like, all eyes are on you and not... the people you're up with.
Yeah, that is true.
I mean, even, like, when, like, you do, like, a monologue, like, by yourself, like, mm-hmm. with no one else on stage.
Yep.
Like, you're still part of an ensemble.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just at that moment.
In that moment.
You are. Like, I mean, like, when Hamlet delivers a soliloquy, the play's called Hamlet. He is the main character, but there's a lot of other characters.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Did you ever do any acting in high school?
No, none whatsoever.
Have you ever done any acting that's outside of improv, or...?
Not really, no. Just the improv.
Like, what do you mean, like, not really? Is that, like, you're...
A theater class in college to meet that art prerequisite.
Yeah,
you know, the art and culture prerequisite in theater class.
But did you do any of those funny, like, any, like, interesting scenes? Like,
oh, God, I did a scene like, from like Hooters. Anne Frank or something? I did a scene, scene from Hooters.
Hooters?
Yeah. I don't even know who wrote that play.
Hooters.
Hooters.
I have no idea what play that is.
Yeah.
Hooters.
Look it up. It wasn't good.
Hooters. Yeah. What a great name of a play. Was it like funny or dramatic? Or?
It was a comedy. We just did a scene. I think the first scene from
it. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So like, what made you move to New York City?
Oh, just comedy. Comedy. I you know, because I interned at the Daily Show and...
Yeah, because Daily Show, that was your like gateway drug.
Yeah, yeah, it was my gateway drug. Did you refer to it as drug?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Because I had intended on teaching high school history and then interned there.
Why high school history?
I had a teacher in high school, Mr. Rindy. Really inspiring guy. Really.
Yeah, no, yeah.
One of those teachers that kind of gets you to break out of your shell. And
I've actually had my fair share of really good history teachers like that.
I think they're usually consistently the ones that are interesting. English teachers and history teachers tend to have that.
Not math. I remember there was a math teacher of mine that I think smoked cigarettes in the classroom when no one was in there.
Yeah.
And like I really was not a big fan of cigarette smell
when
I was in high school.
Yeah.
And he always had, like, fans on in the room. So the whole room smelled like smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, yeah, no, because I'm actually a big history nerd, as you actually do know. And, like, you know, I find it interesting that you wanted to be a history teacher.
I intended on teaching history, yeah. That was the intention. And then I had learned through speaking to the staff at the Daily Show that comedy and writing was a feasible move, so that was kind of the step one, and they all talked about UCB, so I was taking classes at UCB while at the Daily Show, and then...
What was it like when you got into the Daily Show?
What do you mean?
Like, okay, so I assume you like filled out the internship application.
It wasn't even an application, you just sent in your cover letter and resume, and then they interviewed me after I faxed them that info.
Cool.
Yep.
Well, no, that's really chill.
Yeah, super chill. Super chill.
And did you, like, find out immediately that you were, like, one of the interns, or...?
No. Oh, no, it was a long wait. It was real long. I interviewed in January. No. I think I interviewed in February and then found out mid to end of April. It was a while. So I was sweating.
Oh, God. Sweating
pretty bad.
And this was, like, what, senior year of college?
No, I think it was junior end of... Middle or end of, right before senior year.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Cool. So, was that like when you took your first class at UCB, like when you got back, when you got the internship?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Thursdays, level one on Thursdays, I think.
Who was the teacher?
It was originally Gabrus. He taught the first 2 weeks.
I just love the fact that we both have had Gabrus
part 101. Gavin for a week, and then Frusciante taught the last 5 weeks.
Jeez. Why was Gavin only 1 week?
Yeah, I think he was just a sub.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. I think they were honestly sorting out who would be the teacher.
I wonder why Gabrus wasn't able to do it.
Some gig, I don't know. I don't remember.
Getting ready to do the substitute back then. Remember that, the show The Substitute?
Oh, yeah, that was... Yeah, he was getting ready for that, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah, who knows?
Which... I actually watched every episode of that show.
Really?
I'm dead serious.
That's nice.
Yeah, because, I mean, the guy, Gabrus, has always been, like, one of the nicest people to me in the whole scene.
Yeah.
And, like, the fact that he got me to fall in love with it.
Uh-huh.
For those that don't know, which would be very shocking at this point, since almost every episode I mentioned I took Gabrus from 101. He was my 101 teacher, and he really made me fall in love with improv.
Yeah. This, for some reason, reminds me of the psychological phenomena. In terms of name dropping, they've done studies where... whenever you name drop someone, people see you as less competent in the field that you're name dropping the person in.
Okay.
So it's just interesting, you know. I wonder when you're reading people's bios where it says, you know, studied under tutelage of blank, or even speaking of people and name dropping people see you as less competent.
I guess it makes sense because it's kind of like a validation.
Yeah, it's kind of like look who I work with or have worked for or who I'm a part of, you know. So I think the listener listens says, oh, this person is referring to this other person. Therefore, he or she may not be as competent as they pretend to be.
Okay, so yeah.
So I'm just giving you a friendly forewarning. Be wary.
Okay, that's good to know. I mean,
yeah.
I don't intend to come off as incompetent.
Oh no,
or less competent.
I'm not calling you incompetent or less competent.
I mean, I like to think that I've developed a series of skills that I'm pretty good at.
Yes.
Not like in taking or anything like that. Like where like I develop a way. Like But like you know, I mean, I feel good about where I am.
And then another quote. This is one of those cliches or whatever. You find them on these store cards that you see. This is one that I consistently repeat. You've probably heard me say.
I'm sure I have.
What is it? Great minds discuss ideas. Average minds discuss events, and weak minds discuss people. So that's why I find myself feeling bored when I'm talking about my past. Because that's an event. So what is the idea? That's what's more interesting to me. The idea of what is the idea behind trying to find out someone's past? What are we really trying to figure out? You said common ground, but I wasn't totally pleased with that answer. Common ground. Well, maybe a shared understanding of the reality you currently exist in or had once existed in.
Yeah.
So by asking someone about their past, we're trying to figure out what reality did they used to live in, and was it similar to mine? Versus, say, I grew up in a Islamo-fascist household. You know, that would be a different.
That'd be the exact past. Opposite of mine.
Yeah.
But I mean, like the simple fact that we actually are like best friends. Mm-hmm. And, like, you're Egyptian and I'm normal. Like,
it's like, if only everyone in Israel and Palestine and Egypt could just shake hands. Like, we're shaking each other's dicks right now, you know? If only people could do that.
No, I mean, like, I like to give part of the show, like, time to be, like, kind of, like, semi-biography.
Yeah, but it's like, what's the point, you know? What's the point?
Okay. I don't really have an answer for
that. Yeah, yeah. No, well, that is a nihilistic question in the first place. I'm just trying to figure out what is the intention behind asking that question. And to get on the same page or learning. Learning seems to be something we enjoy. Learning about people.
I mean, that's the thing, like, one of the reasons why I really like doing this podcast. Mm-hmm. And, like, one of the reasons, I mean, for those that don't know, one of the big podcasts that inspired me was UCB Theater Podcast, mm-hmm. where it was very similar to this.
Yeah.
I mean, this podcast sometimes does go off onto acting tangents
uh-huh.
and stuff like that. But, like, I mean, I also like to, what I like to do for myself is because I like to know as much as I can about people that they want to share.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, if someone I care about, which everyone that's been on my show is someone I care about, mm-hmm. and I want to know how they feel about things.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, like, looking back in their life is always is a good thing to do.
One could say so.
I mean,
Okay.
I mean, God, we all make mistakes and stuff.
No, it has nothing to do with mistakes. I mean, it's just what, you know, to me, what is interesting is our ideas. And so what are the ideas behind even this and doing this? Okay. What are we trying to discover in doing this?
Yeah, I like to reflect.
I like that too.
I think, because, you and me both live in our heads a lot. I do it in a much more very northeastern, nerdy, neurotic, Woody Allen style way. But you do it in a very quiet way.
Oh, totally.
And man. I'm very much like, I'm in my head, leave me alone, or I'm in my head and I'm loud right now talking and sort of.
I like to talk to myself out loud. That's the beauty of living in a city. Giving myself permission to appear insane is probably one of the best things you can do.
I like to laugh.
Ooh, yep. I like laughing like when I'm walking, I'll laugh aloud.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. Like, I listen to a lot of podcasts on my on my iPod, and I really like just listening to, like, Comedy Bang Bang or something like that, and just, like, letting myself be okay to laugh in public, you know?
Yeah.
Like, when I was listening to the James Adomian album, Low Hanging Fruit, I was on the subway, like, fucking crying with laughter. Because his impressions are just so funny. Yeah. And, like, his stamp is so great and all that great stuff. And I don't know. I mean, I'm really a big fan of reflection.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, So, no, I mean, if there's ever a Hit the Mark episode where I am the guest, which mm-hmm. might happen, I don't know why anyone would want that, because yeah. they pretty much have already learned a lot about me in the last 27 episodes. Mm-hmm. But, no, I mean, like, I just personally feel like that...
What do we achieve with all this information? Like, you know, what are we gaining from...
Common understanding, from, like...
Common understanding of what, though? Like, are we clear in what we're trying to achieve with, say, this discussion, you know? Or is it just more digital stuff to hold on to? You know, like, to me, the idea of letting go, is this something we can let go of? Or are we holding on to things? Is this an exercise in holding on? You know, what?
But is it bad to hold on to things?
I wouldn't qualify it that way. It just...
I mean, like, when, like, you lose, like, family members and stuff like that, you have to hold on to, like, memories.
Do we have to hold on to them? What is the intention behind holding on to memories of family? I mean, maybe the warmth of recalling the loved yeah. one who had died?
Yeah.
What do we achieve by that?
That's
why I'm not on Facebook. Partly that's another reason. Yeah. I think it's just the inability to let go and accept and move on and let go. Like, you know, we're in this wonderful art form of improv, which is disposable. Everything about it is disposable. So that's why I don't like talking. It's a
beautiful piece of art where up to like 150 people can watch it and yeah, it's
but,
gone.
And it's gone. But that's why I don't like talking about great shows or bad shows. It's fun, but then it's just kind of, you know.
Well, what's
it seems
the next,
to defeat yeah. the purpose. It seems to defeat the purpose by... ruminating in it. And like Facebook, we have all these photos people upload of these memories that ideally would probably be better off passing. I guess that's then it gets into the whole argument of why do we even take photos in the first place. God, I sound like an old coot sometimes.
That's fine. Hey dude, I mean, you're giving people like you're letting people see the real seeing Mishu.
Oh yeah, the seeing the real the warts and all.
Hey, I mean, if you're cool with it, I'm cool with it.
I don't understand. I don't understand the inability to let go.
I just love how we haven't gotten up to the point like where we actually meet in our timelines.
Yeah, I know. One of these days.
Wow, this sounds so sadly romantic.
Aww.
Aww. Moving forward. So you took, who was your 201 teacher? At UCB.
It was Brandon.
Oh.
It was Brandon.
Great. So that must have been pretty cool being taught
yeah,
by someone.
Yeah, yeah. It was nice, kind of. It was interesting. It was kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And then we were in what I like to call it the magical Tugmo class.
Yep. Yep.
Because that was. I seriously talked to still about half the people from that class.
Yeah, I think I communicate with probably the half that stuck with it. I'm still on speaking.
Right.
The other half just kind of like...
Yeah,
like
David Rosenberg, who was episode mm-hmm. 5 of the show.
Yep.
You, mm-hmm. Kim Kalish, mm-hmm.
Eileen Clark, Allie
Yeah,
Reed.
I just combined Allie Reed and Eileen yep. Clark.
Stephen
Smith, who I haven't really talked to since mm-hmm. class.
Ben Gold.
God, I forgot about Ben.
Yep, he's, yep.
How's he doing?
I texted him over Thanksgiving. He seems to be doing all right.
Good. Mm-hmm. Long Islanding, all that good stuff.
Yeah, I'm not too positive.
That's fine.
So what I like to do on Thanksgiving, here's a fun tidbit, guys, yeah. is the day before the day of, I like to call everyone I value and either share my gratitude with them. And it ended up me just leaving a lot of voicemails where I was specifically saying things about what I'm pleased about. But I recommend it, man. I recommend it. Mark picked it up. We had about a 3 or 4 minute conversation. I would also time them and note them down how long they
really?
Were. Yeah.
I'm not surprised. I don't know why.
Just so I... Yeah.
Do you realize if you ever committed any horrible crime?
It's all like right. so much... And like, that's my own hypocrisy, too, because I journal every day. I write...
Yeah.
Every day, usually at night or in the afternoon, exactly what I did that day or the day before. And I've been doing it for several years. I've written, I think, around 2 million words worth of
Why do gratitude. You journal?
Gratitude, it's an exercise in, I think, awareness. I think an exercise in being aware of the sheer miracle of existence, of being alive. The wonder of, you know, oh, whoa, there's food in front of me.
instead of just shoving it down my face.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's going to be food in front of me tomorrow. And that's not, you know, pessimism or nihilism. It's just, who knows?
Because, like, I mean, like, with the whole journaling thing, mm-hmm. like, I mean, I obviously know that since I've met you.
Yeah.
Like, because I don't know when you started journaling, but it was definitely before I met you.
Yep.
And I've now known you for over 2 years.
Yeah.
And what I always find that very respectable.
Oh, thank you.
I really honestly do. Like, it's not just like me like being nice or anything like that. Because mm-hmm. I mean, I honestly, I think our friendship is past just niceties.
Yeah, it's beyond that. That is, I think it is respectable. I think not doing anything out of a sense of should though. I never.
Oh no! Yeah.
You know, it's because I enjoy doing it, and I would wish everyone chose to write and self-explore.
I agree.
But they don't have to. No one has to do anything. But in terms of my own hypocrisy, you know, here's me writing every day, and you know, in terms of letting go, could I just delete, or you know, burn all my journals?
Well, that'd I mean, be a do nice you still keep? Because I know, because since we did live together for a mm-hmm. month of summer,
mm-hmm.
I know that you do type also on
your
computer.
Yeah, yeah. So I write it down the SparkNotes version of what I did through the day, and then I'll reference the shorthand,
right.
And then type from the shorthand.
So, like, I mean, would have you ever lost the files?
Not yet. I'm looking that's forward great. To the day I do, though.
like, what do you think that's going to cause?
Well, I don't know what it would cause. I think I'd just kind of mourn it, however long it would take me to mourn all those entries.
Yeah.
And then I would just start over. So.
And do you still have, like, every one of your, like, moleskin journals and all that stuff?
I've luckily have yet to lose any of the moleskins. I think they're all pocket size, probably around 4 inches by 2.5 inches.
And are they all, like, do they all follow you, or are some of them up in, like, upstate with your family?
Yes, I think most of them actually are wherever I currently live. They're usually in shoe boxes, and I think I've probably gone through 30 of them. Usually it's, like, two to three months.
Now I know why I saw a weird shoebox mm-hmm. like randomly when you lived
yep,
here.
Yep, that's why that shoebox is probably anything. You want to find any of my personal secrets or intimate sentimental objects, go through a shoebox. It's very
simple. Not even your shoebox. It's just like some random person.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's some old skin journal.
I hang around Foot Lockers and then wait for the garbage boxes and I take whatever.
Yeah. I want to talk about DeLorean.
If you
no okay
that's fine. I'll do the classic improv move of why it's an event.
Well, I mean,
right?
It was your first team.
Yeah, it was an indie team. All right, that's it. We talked about it. All right,
cool.
It's an indie team. We rehearsed for a couple months. I didn't want to perform because I just my goal was just to rehearse, not to perform. If I were in the mode to perform, then I would join a team where I wanted to perform. Well, some of you guys wanted to, so
yeah,
that was that.
Well, that's fine. Mm-hmm. All right, we talked about DeLorean. Whole 30 seconds. That's actually completely fine.
Yeah,
team's not around anymore, and
I think
I talk. I'm okay with four fifths of the members.
Yeah, well, I resent every one of them, and I wish they die a horrible death. Wow. And I look forward to the day that I don't want to talk to any of that.
Okay.
I'm sure. No.
If Stacey actually listens to this podcast. No. I doubt Stacey knows.
I feel
awesome.
No resentment. I feel
whatever. It was fun while it lasted.
It was fun. Vacuums. I'm thinking about vacuums. You know, it goes back to the idea of podcasts and interviews. These are vacuums. How much of this? It's the snake eating its own tail. So, how can we expand our base of knowledge? How can we expand it? To me, I worry about people who perform in improv or in comedy in general
mm-hmm.
or whatever art form that just the overconsumption of that form. Is just going to make everything circular and boring, not fresh.
Well, that's why you have to read newspapers and like actually experience life.
Yes, exactly. Like that's why I was tentative about doing this. What? You know, it's like am I contributing to the reiteration of things? You know,
no, because you have a different outlook on life than anyone else actually.
Oh, thank you.
And I mean that in the best possible way too.
Yeah.
I had to.
I just worry about
I knew
about
that you knew that, but, like, mm-hmm. I knew that you the listeners to, weren't sure that, like, I meant that in a mm-hmm. nice way.
Yeah, yeah. I just.
Because, I mean, we do have very different outlooks.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But, like, it's just, I really, I'm just so amazed, because, What the listeners don't know is that you were my first improv friend that actually graduated from improv friend to an actual friend to very recently becoming a true best friend.
And
it takes a lot.
It does.
It really, like, honestly, it takes...
But this is, see, we're circling back to to the personal versus the impersonal versus the idea, right?
Okay.
We're going back to the event of our friendship. That is the event which isn't as interesting to me as the idea behind what is, you know...
All right.
Well, it's fear. I think it's just fear. It's,
okay, what do you want to talk about then?
No, well, I'm talking, you know?
Yeah.
The fear of not knowing enough, so we consume as much of this craft as we can because we are afraid, or I am afraid, that we will never know enough about this craft. Therefore, I need to listen to every podcast. I need to go to every fucking show. And it...
But I mean, it's all these comparisons. Like fear that, I feel like that's a general fear that most human beings have.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing or
it's
a wrong
not,
thing.
It's not. It's just a human
I don't
want to
feed back into it. I don't want to speak.
Okay.
That's why I don't give a shit about... Where I came from, where my upbringing was. I'm more interested in exploring
we're up to current idea. We're up to current.
Good.
Like, I mean, by current, I mean, like, we're now, like,
right,
at, like, the summer.
We're in the moment. Are we in the now?
No, we're not
right
in,
now?
The, we're not in the moment. We're not.
In a couple more minutes, can we be in the now?
We'll be in the now very soon, okay? Because I want to talk a little bit about your spirit quest.
Oh, yeah, sure.
A little bit. I mean, not too much.
Yeah, man.
I mean, like, there's something.
Explain it. Sure. We'll get there.
Okay, so for those that don't know.
Well, you're in. Like, we're still talking about this fear. We're fine. It's when will we allow ourselves the permission to explore things? And I'm generalizing here, but you know, I like poetry. I'm in love with poetry. I think probably if I were to qualify art forms, I would say there's none higher than the poem. Don't quote me on that.
I'm not. But you just said it on the record.
I like poetry, yeah. Off the record, there's nothing, no greater art than the one verse, the universe, which is the single line of poetry that we are currently existing and have always existed in. The universe, the one singular song. That's why I like poetry.
Okay.
And I think we just need to do different things. And just, there's a difference between trust and faith. And I think a mixture of both, and just allowing ourselves to just not be the best. Let go of knowing, right?
Yeah, no, I actually understand exactly what you're saying there. I'm okay being in the top half.
What does that even mean?
Pushing myself to be the best that I can, but not necessarily the best.
I guess because when it comes down to it, it's all intrinsic. So we're qualifying these ideas by using terms of better and best, but fundamentally it's the intrinsic self-value that is the most important, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So who cares if the top half, the bottom half, you know...
I want to push myself to create something that is relevant for myself and that people might find interesting.
Why do people matter?
As an artist,
as someone who does art,
the very simple first off, economic. I mean, it's a horrible thing, but yeah, economic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really honestly wish, like, watching like shows like Barter Kings. I don't know if you ever watched.
No, I'm not familiar with it.
But it's a show like on A&E, where two guys like basically barter up to, like, something like big with like whatever, and I honestly think a bartering system might not be a terrible thing, but like, yeah, I mean, like, going back to like artistic with like economics, like, yeah, I mean, if someone as an actor, writer, improviser, all that stuff that I like to call myself, you know, if my name can actually mean something of value, where people want to see it.
What does that accomplish, though? What does that accomplish? Like, it means your name means something. What does that?
It means
that
it means that the product that you're putting out is something that people need to see.
That something people need to see. That the product
or experience.
Back to that, but what? Why does that matter? I'm not asking in a nihilistic or pessimistic way.
I mean, also,
what is that? Is so? It
I
seems
really
like
hate,
you
I'm,
value to be known and to be understood and to be.
The weird thing is, like, fame is not something that like matters to me. Which I know is like sounds very contradictory to what I just said.
Well, I guess it's not contradictory because you can desire respect but not desire fame. So to have people want to know the stuff you create isn't necessarily the same thing.
I mean, it's okay. It's like you know, one of my goals in life is to be on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if I'm on Broadway, it means I am in a certain tier of class.
Yeah.
And that tier is above other tiers. Of course, right now I'm in a very lower tier. and I'm working my way up.
Yeah.
I'm doing it through a process that is taxing.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. Yep. It's quite taxing. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. it's fine. Because this is something that I love to do.
Yep.
It's not just something I love to do. It's something I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm not a happy person.
Yeah.
And I know this because I tried not to.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think my ultimate goal in life is just truthful happiness.
I like that. I like that a lot. When I think of goals, I think of the idea of game. And I think of Delaney.
Okay.
And I remember him saying... Within a sketch writing class, I recommend anyone who's listening take Sketch 202 with Delaney. I always say that.
Mm-hmm.
Write. And he would say, define game broadly and then execute it specifically. So what would an example, you know, be?
Sorry.
Chris Farley's character in SNL.
Okay.
The motivational speaker.
Matt Foley.
You wouldn't define his game, and this is in the terms I've described earlier, you wouldn't define his game as motivational speaker or wacky motivationalist speaker, because that's too specific. You would define his game as projection, which is, that's the game he's playing. He's projecting his miserable life onto...
Everyone
he's speaking, motivating. So that's how you would define that sketch, that game. Projection, one word, projection.
Mm-hmm.
And then the way they execute it is specifically, they put him in the room of a suburban basement or a suburban living room,
yeah.
Speaking to teens. So that's how he happens to have the specifics of being a public speaker or a motivational speaker. But you could still play his game projection if he worked at a McDonald's or whatever.
Exactly.
So... In terms of goals in life, I apply the same concept. Goal in life, defined broadly. For you, it seemed like happiness. For me, yeah, happiness or self-support. Or support myself in a creative way. So that's broad. Self-support, defined broadly. How do I execute that specifically? Currently, I'm doing that through what? Taking classes, writing, volunteering or...
You're living in Chicago right now.
In Chicago, taking classes there, learning about comedy there, writing there. So it's done specifically, but if anything were to change, say Chicago gets bombed, there is no Chicago, all right, my goal is still self-support. Maybe I'll move to a farm where I can self-support. And then I move to more specific ways, you know?
Yeah.
So by defining it broadly... And doing it specifically, it relieves me of the future bitterness and resentment that may occur from failure. Or not even failure.
So it sounds like almost like a safety net.
Theoretically, yeah. It's a safety net for emotional well-being in the future.
Versus that's fine.
If I define specifically, for me to enjoy my life, I need to achieve my dream goal of blank of writing on a TV show or writing on this specific show, then I'm more likely to feel utter disappointment, despair, and disheartened when that doesn't happen, versus the power and freedom of defining broadly and trusting the way I do it specifically.
The funny thing, with what you're saying right there,
mm-hmm.
is the reason why I put out, 30 goals for myself each year.
Oh, that's nice. I like that idea. 30 goals, that's two, a little more than two a month.
Well, I mean, and some of them are, very easy. Like, one of them, sometimes...
Talk to a stranger.
Yeah, or, smile a little bit more.
Ooh, I like that one.
And you know me, I smile a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I find, for lack of a word, I find the funny.
Yep.
Yeah.
My goal was to engage people who asked me for money, and I was trying to figure a way how to frame it that it worked, because I would never feel quite right walking away from someone who asked me for change. I would feel this residual guilt. Oh, I just ate this big meal, and here I am thinking about the problems of the world and the warmth of a restaurant, and then I'll step over a person asking for change. And I realized I value choice. Because in those contexts, I imagined myself not having the choice, pressured, yes or no. So then I gave myself the choice of, oh, how can I make this a mutual exchange, me and this person? So now, here's another strategy for all y'all not listening. When someone asks me for money, I ask them for three things. One of three things. Do you know any jokes? No. Do you know any riddles? No. What is a rule of life you are currently living by? Usually they know at least one of the three.
Well, yeah, at least number three.
Number three. So now it is no longer me giving charity and feeling pity on a human being. It's me engaging a human being, and we're giving each other joy in that moment. And he or she is teaching me something more profound than half the shit you see, you know, on on stages or on TV or even on film.
Do you realize what that means, though? And what you just said to me?
What?
About, like the joy that you're trying to get, like the mutual exchange of joy?
Yeah.
That's pretty much exactly what I do with this podcast.
Ooh, I like that, man. That's intrinsically motivating you.
Because, I mean, I've never had an episode that I've not been proud of.
Yeah.
I mean...
We still have some time left, so I'm going to try and be even more aggressive.
Surprisingly, very little time.
Yeah.
I can end this whenever I want, actually.
Oh, fuck you.
You're going to fuck me.
Well, I'm sleeping over, aren't I?
Okay, well, I guess I'll let the world know.
The thing we're putting emphasis on such, in my opinion, I don't know. I guess everything's meaningless. But we're putting emphasis on things that aren't intellectually challenging. I'm tired of having drinking buddies, and I'm tired of just talking about pop culture, boring stuff. You know, why don't we challenge each other? Instead, we ask, you know, about, oh, are you caught up on Breaking Bad? And then we'll talk about Breaking Bad for 20 minutes, even though you spent 200 hours watching it. You know, I love The Wire, but I've had only one really palatable exchange discussing The Wire. So I think we're no longer putting value on challenging each other to become intellectual.
All right, then fine. I'm going to ask you a straight-up intellectual question.
Oh, nice.
Ouch.
That'll titillate me.
Okay. No, because I know a lot of people have been curious about this, because, as you know, everyone thinks of you as kind of like a mythical figure.
I don't know what people think about me, but anyway.
I know you don't care either, but why Chicago?
Well, that's... why Chicago?
I don't want a simple answer, for different perspective of comedy. Okay.
Why Chicago? I needed a Mecca, man.
Okay.
We Arabs, we need to seek Mecca, sought out the improv Mecca. I don't know if that'll satisfy... Chicago?
It is an improv
Why
Mecca.
Chicago? I mean, the pragmatic answer is
I know you are a big
philosophy.
Blues Brothers fan, but we're not talking pop culture right now. I want the real Mishu answer.
Intuition. Oh, the real answer is, honestly, here's a stupid story. It's not stupid. Here's just a story.
This was actually a
several
story.
Years ago.
Yeah.
I was at Union Pool, a bar in Brooklyn.
Great.
And I had been drinking for a while. This is usually around 2, 3, 4 in the morning when things get nice and existential or dark. And
it's right now 2:15 a.m. too.
And I meet this lady, this seer, this fortune teller, this soothsayer.
Okay.
From Argentina. And we start talking. And I'm at that level of intoxication where people cease to be the people they are, and they become larger. They become the idea. So this lady became the idea. And somehow we got talking about improv, and she was an improv goddess of sorts.
What?
And she told me, oh, you're studying improv in New York. Why aren't you in Chicago? You know, if you're serious about this, everything needs to start in Chicago. And I'm like, well, no, I can't go to Chicago. I've been in this community in New York. I've been ingrained in this. This is where I have roots. I have an apartment.
Yeah.
I can't do this. She just says, you have to.
And I keep saying I can't. And I'm like drunk and near tears. And she just looks at me and says, "You will never do it." And she walked away. And I felt utter... I just despair.
So you moved to Chicago to...
Well, anyway, the story keeps continues. Okay. So she leaves, and the seed was planted. This is several years ago. She planted a seed, this goddess, this herald. She planted a seed, and I was on the spirit journey using the 45-day Amtrak rail pass, $800 currently, 2012. Something around there, and
he's got plenty of stories.
I'm in Chicago, and I'm there for 7 days, and I go see Io Annoyance in Second City, and I'm staying with some friend my last night, and I sort of realize, like, I can do this. Like, I no longer have an apartment in New York City. I basically have no ties.
Right.
Committed.
Because,
no commitments.
Like, at this point, we were potentially going to be roommates.
Yeah, so, but I had no commitments.
Right.
So I decided, I can do this. I can move here. I can do this. I can pull this off. Then it wasn't until I was really, you know, I think, like, a little before signing my current lease in Chicago that I remembered, oh, that seed grew. That lady was right.
Okay.
So so there was an intuition in moving there, but honestly, as ridiculous as it sounds, this woman, I believe she was from Argentina, really did something to get me to consider moving there.
All right, so...
So that is the non-rational answer.
I like that. Like, I'm completely fine with that. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great answer. And that's a truthful answer, too, which is even more important in this conversation.
Nice. Truth and comedy.
Yes. They go hand in hand. And there is also a hair good tell for a book.
Yeah.
Maybe false and comedy. But no, I mean, like, because I know what you told me tonight about, like, with, like, your whole landlord situation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How does that make you feel about about having to find a new place?
Oh, so, I feel so fine. For those of you who don't know, my landlord's getting married, and he's converting the apartment I live in into a single family household, so the lease is up in February. And I wish him, you know, many, many mitzvahs on him. You know, I hope his wife and all that, and future stepchild, they all get along. Yeah, it's just another. It's just life, man. Yeah.
Okay.
It's life.
I was just curious to see if that had any effect.
It's what the improviser's duty is to adjust, and we adjust.
It's also the actor's duty too, dude.
Yeah, that's
the writer's duty. It's any kind of duty that, like, if there's,
and that goes back to letting go. If we cannot let go, we cannot adjust. If I cannot let go to the idea of living cozily in an apartment in Wicker Park, and I can't let go of that idea, then I will become distracted by my own fury and upset, my indignation. How dare he ask me? Move on.
I know. I'm just trying. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I really like that answer. I did not know about the soothsayer story until just now.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know. You can meet some people.
And one thing that I always have admired so much about you is that you put yourself in situations to experience life.
Sometimes, and most times it's not intentional. I honestly, there's nothing that bothers me more than the idea of do it so you have the story.
Of course.
That is such a extrinsic reason to do anything. Do it so you have the story. That makes other people be the prime motivator for any sort of shenanigans you're about to get in. A what?
Or even a potential villain.
What is a villain?
The bad guy.
Who is the bad guy? What is a bad guy?
The antagonist.
Who is the antagonist?
The person that's against you.
Who's against me? I don't. I mean, why? Okay. What are we talking about? Like,
I mean, like,
when I don't. Well, that's us against them, and I don't agree with that anyway.
I'm not saying that mentality.
I'm talking about do it so you can have the story, that idea. Where does a villain come with the idea of do it so you can have the story? I'm just trying to get with your train of thought.
All right, so, like, let's say, like, for instance, this is, like, such a bad extreme, mm-hmm. and I'm going extreme on purpose just because I know it's close to the end of the podcast anyways. But, like, okay, let's say, like, you meet this girl. Like, things are heating up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, she's like, hey, come back to my place, and we'll do some cocaine.
That sounds too familiar. Continue.
And so, like, you do cocaine.
Yes.
Your whole life basically falls apart.
That's removing autonomy from yourself.
I know.
She's not placing blame on something else. Are you trying to say she's a civilian?
Yes.
No, she's not. She's a person who offered me cocaine.
Okay.
Anyway, but to get back to the original point, I don't intentionally get myself into hairy situations.
You don't.
Because I don't even like telling those stories. Like, I was at a bar a week ago, and I keep getting propositioned by men in bathrooms. You know, I'm just taking a leak, and he's over me at the urinal, and this guy goes, you want to play? And I'm like, no, thank you. Oh, come on, man, let's just play. Like, I'm all right. I got some white lightning, cocaine. And I'm like, I'm good. Can I look at your dick? He's standing over my shoulder. I'm pretty sure you've already seen it. Oh, man, come on. I'm going to be famous. What's your name? I don't even remember his name, though.
Tom Cruise.
Is Edwin Diaz. Yeah. Edwin Diaz, if you remember him. Yeah, clarity of intention. Clarity of intention.
Okay.
Which goes back to my boredom of people prefacing stories with, I was so drunk when blank happened.
Right.
So
it's also kind of a cop-out for yourself.
It is a total cop-out, because I think a much more interesting story is, I was entirely sober when I saw a bunch of people sitting on a stoop, and I said, I'm going to lock my bicycle up and invite myself to their party.
That sounds like something you would do, too.
I did that when I first moved here.
I'm not surprised.
Got a lot of free vegan treats.
What I like so much about you, and that I admire so much about you, is that you're bold.
I may act and be in ways that people can consider bold. I wouldn't call myself, I am bold.
Well, I mean, like, I remember even, like, when we, like, the easiest example I can think of, like, very quickly,
mm-hmm.
is, like, in Sleep No More. When we were in Sleep No More together. Yeah. You told me about what happened when you rode the elevator. They're, like, fortune favors the bold. And you pushed your way out of the elevator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I never did that. I mean, like, because, like, I went to see Sleep No More 3 times. Mm-hmm. I want to see it again still, because mm-hmm. I haven't been there in a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And, like, whenever I get on that, like, I try to get out, like, different floors in the elevator, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I like how our brains work so differently, but we have overall the same basic idea.
Yep.
I don't know. I mean, it's just the way my brain is working.
Yeah, I think the way people's brains work are interesting, and I think I like giving people the benefit of the doubt. I try to imagine people when I see them in their best and their worst, both in terms of intellectually and emotionally. I like imagining people having the most joyous occasions of their life. I do this on the subway, a nice exercise. Oh, yeah, for empathy. An exercise for empathy for me is just staring at people on the train and imagining what they look like in their best, say, around their best friends, laughing over old inside jokes. And what do they look like in their worst, like sobbing at the death of a family member, or sobbing in front of a loved one who's leaving. So I like doing that exercise. It really helps expand your heart. And then another exercise I do, unrelated, is a fun improv game to do when you're bored. What's in their pocket or what's in their purse? And just look at people. And it's an exercise in specificity.
Yeah.
So, in this lady's purse, she has one of those lipstick with the Ed Hardy kind of decals on it. She's got a flyer for a punk show, the Flaming Turds they're performing.
I totally have a vision of her in my head now, too.
Yeah, so, like, whenever you see that, it's a fun exercise to just keep yourself sharp. What's in their pocket?
And specificity is the thing that really lacks in this actual world.
In the actual world, specificity is what lacks in a lot of improv, and that just makes me want to put a gun to my head. I don't care about heightening so much anymore. I care about specificity.
Which is clearly a thing that's, like, definitely the Chicago in you now.
Well, I don't know. Because I think Chicago heightening is a big vocab word they really toss around that I've noticed. Heightening raises stakes, which has been nixed from the UCB curriculum forever. Yeah. So I think lately what I've seen in Chicago is a lot of an emphasis on heightening, but there's also I pray to the goddess of specificity. That is my goddess.
I like that. Mm-hmm. All right, so we've actually already talked for an hour.
Is this a two-parter? Are we doing a two-parter?
No.
No.
I mean, we're not done yet. I mean,
yeah.
I really look, because there's a question I always like to ask.
Oh yeah.
Like, there's always two questions I ask every episode.
I'd like to close with a poem at some point.
You can.
All right, or several poems maybe. Anyway, go ahead.
So what I always like to ask is simply, what are you, Mishu Hilmi, mm-hmm. looking forward to in the future? Like, not like for yourself. Oh. Like, I mean, like movies or plays or something like that.
Not necessarily.
Like, what do you want to see?
What I want to see.
Like, that's coming up soon.
What I want to see that's coming up soon is.
It can also be out, you know.
Is people challenging people, is questioning the things we do. What I want to see is people really think about. I hope more people read Chris Hedges' book Empire of Illusion, and I look forward to people seeing or reading more. I'm not you know looking forward to a movie or any of that.
Yeah.
What I look forward to see people not being afraid to express their voice, and challenge Occupy. People get involved with Occupy. I'd like to see that.
How's that doing in Chicago?
They have. General assemblies every Wednesday and Saturdays in Chicago. Because fear is what will get us stuck in inverse totalitarianism, where we allow the anonymity of corporate state to get us to slowly affect our own views on privacy.
Yeah.
People often abandon privacy to be included.
That's what's happening.
Human beings value inclusion more than they value privacy.
I understand that.
So yeah. I just hope people keep on pushing to remember that we are humans.
Okay.
So that's what I'm looking forward
to. I feel like I have to do my plugs first now, because I normally close out with my plugs.
Oh, yeah, they're nice. It'll be in harmony. You close with your plug, and then mine will segue nicely into...
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So my plugs, as you guys might know, on January 7th, Second High Moon has our 7th show. Well, January 7th, Second Honeymoon has... Yeah, I gave myself confused there, word-wise. Christopher Durang will be the theme for this month. We have guest improvising list Marshall Stratton, Jordan Klepper, who is a big Chicago guy and now UCB guy.
Mm.
Acting, we have guest acting Brett Epstein, Michael Grew, and a good friend of mine from college, Alex Hernandez, who recently was just in Richard III at the Public Theater this past summer. And you can follow me at MarkLevy85 on Twitter. I tumble at hitthemarkpodcast.tumblr.com. Mishu?
Oh, yes. I would like to plug for all you New Yorkers who are in town for New Year's Day. There will be a poetry marathon at the Poetry Project, which is at St. Mark's Church on, I believe, East 10th and 1st Avenue, somewhere around there. So, yeah, so I don't know what time it starts, but it's all day.
It's not on St. Mark's, that church?
Maybe it's on St. Mark's. I always assume St. Mark's is 10th Street. Is it 9th?
It's 8th.
8th, anyway. So, probably 8th.
Because that's
Google the church.
Right? Yeah.
So, I'll close with two poems. A short one, which is my favorite poem by Gregory Corso. And this one is just called Power. And I memorized. I'll try and... Yep. Power is not... Wait, you are power, beautiful people. Power is not to be dropped from a plane. A hat is power. The world is power. Being afraid is power. Standing on a street corner waiting for no one is power. The demon is not as powerful as walking across the street. The angel is not as powerful as looking and then not looking. That's Gregory Corso. And I'll close with a long one that I've memorized on the bus. As best as I can, this is Allen Ginsberg's footnote to Howl. Holy, 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 holy. The world is holy. The soul is holy. The skin is holy. The nose is holy. The tongue and cock and hand and asshole holy. Everything is holy. Everybody's holy. Everywhere is holy. Every day is an eternity. Every man's an angel. The bum's as holy as the seraphim. The madman is holy as you, my soul, are holy. The typewriter is holy.
The poem is holy, the voice is holy, the hairs are holy, the ecstasy is holy. Holy Peter, holy Alan, holy Solomon, holy Lucian, holy Kerouac, holy Hunky, holy Burroughs, holy Cassidy, holy the unknown buggered and suffering beggars, holy the hideous human angels, holy my mother in the insane asylum, holy the cocks of the grandfathers of Kansas, holy the groaning saxophone, holy the bop apocalypse, holy the jazz bands, marijuana hipster, junk, peace and junk and drums, holy the solitudes of skyscrapers and pavements, holy the cafeterias filled with millions, holy the mysterious rivers of tears under the streets, holy the lone juggernaut, holy the vast lamb of the middle class, holy the crazy shepherds of rebellion who digs Los Angeles is Los Angeles, holy New York, holy San Francisco, holy Peoria and Seattle, holy Paris, holy Tangiers, holy Moscow, holy Istanbul, holy time and eternity, holy eternity and time, holy the clocks in space, holy the fourth dimension, holy the fifth international, holy angel in Moloch, holy the sea, holy the desert, holy the railroad, holy the locomotive, holy the visions, holy the hallucinations, holy the miracles, holy the abyss, holy forgiveness, holy charity, mercy, faith, holy hours, bodies, magnanimity, holy the supernatural, extra brilliant, intelligent kindness of the soul. That's Allen Ginsberg's Footnote to Howl.
And that was beautiful. And I'll see you guys next time on Hit the Mark. Bye.